Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Crosby classic brought hope and sentimentality to servicemen and women around the globe during World War II, but interestingly enough, I've met a couple World War II veterans for whom that melody became a haunting reminder of things they would much rather forget. We're going to get to that, but first, a very pleasant World War II memory in the midst of one of the most bloody and infamous battles in the history of the world. Harmon Atwater earned a Silver Star for his heroics during the Battle of the Bulge with the 26th Infantry Division. With Christmas approaching, he received the occasional incoming shell from the enemy, but also a very special Christmas surprise from Uncle Sam.
That Christmas, we were dug in. The snow was probably 3 and 4 feet deep. And you dig down to find a spot, and the ground was froze down 2 or 3 feet, so there wasn't no way you could dig a foxhole. Christmas Eve, there's nothing going on, nobody's moving, and we're thinking, well, tomorrow will be the same. The Germans were facing the same problems we were having, so there wasn't much fighting going on. And the old sergeant comes by, and he said, we're going to have a Christmas dinner shortly, and we all laughed like you got special K rations, you know. And it wasn't, I guess, around noontime. Here come a Jeep, chains on all four wheels, and a trailer loaded with cans, big containers of food, turkey, mashed potatoes, everything that you need for Christmas dinner. And this is, I mean, really a great treat. It lifted our morale, you know, and God knows it needed it. But what kind of stuck in my mind was there was three men to a Jeep, and they was saying, eat fast, boys. They was wanting to get out of there because they were shelling us, you know. But I thought, well, we'd say, well, stick around, enjoy your meal. And they'd say, well, we got other places to go. Well, they did to other troops. But that was an amazing thing, that we had people thinking behind us that knew that would boost our morale. But can you imagine sitting in snow and ice at that time, probably 10 below zero? It was quite amazing. Somebody planned way ahead on that.
And 3 weeks later, he would receive his Christmas present. Now, I don't know how many of us would consider being wounded a Christmas present, but Harmon did.
We was in a wooded area, and a shell burst, and a number of men were wounded. When a shell hit the tree bursts, plus the shell. So you get a double treatment. And I get hit in the right hand. When the ambulance come to pick up the others that got hit, they took us back to Luxembourg City, Luxembourg. Had a big, large hospital there. And I didn't find out till after I was there a day or so that it was German troops were there, too, that had been wounded. They were in separate rooms, but they were connected. But that was a pleasant stay because I wasn't bedridden, and I had a sore hand for a few days, but I got to add this little ditty. I was laying on my bed the second night there, and I heard the nurses talking, mostly the women nurses. They were talking about midnight they were going for supper. And I brightened up, and I said, well, where do you go for supper? They said, to the kitchen, just down the next floor. And I said, well, they'd feed somebody else that's hungry. And they both said, come on with us. You want to eat? You bet. So I went down with them, and I hadn't had a decent meal or didn't taste good went down to the kitchen, and the old cook comes out, and he said, "What do you want, soldier?" And I said, "Man, I said, I'll have me a stack of pancakes." He brought me out about 6 or 8 pancakes, and nurses was laughing, you know. And I ate that. Boy, it tastes good. And I'm leaned back in the seat, and my stomach began to boil. And I said, "Is there a restroom around here?" They said, "Right there." And I went in there, and I lost the whole thing. But I come back, and they want to know. He said, "You all right?" And I said, "Oh, yeah." And the cook come out, and he said, "Well, can I get you something light?" I said, "I'll have me another stack of pancakes."
Didn't learn your lesson, or you're just priming the pump, one of the two. Well, and that's a lighthearted story from that stay in the hospital, but that took you off the lines for the rest of the Battle of the Bulge, and what do you think is the significance of that, being off the lines for 20 days?
Let me say this. I knew probably 15 guys when I got hit, and I come back on the line in Sarlaten, Germany, right on the Siegfried line, and there was one man that I knew, and he was a cook, Sammy Rakowski. And the rest were all gone. I don't know whether they were killed or wounded, but there was never heard from them again. So I always felt that 20 days off the line probably saved my life.
And his life would touch so many others. That was the late Harmon Atwater from the 26th Infantry Division. The 75th Infantry Division was also involved in the Battle of the Bulge. Sarge Sargentini was with that division. He was tasked with laying communication lines.
It was Christmas. We went into fighting just around Christmas right there. We were in the lines during Christmas. I remember it was just out of Soy that I was in my first blow-up. Somebody stepped on a mine, or what happened, we don't know. But anyway, there was about 8 engineers that were killed that night, you know. So, and before that, our unit had been in combat, and we lost quite a few men. I'll never know just how many, but we knew that we had lost a lot of them. And we stood out in the snow with our dark uniforms. We didn't have camouflage like the Germans did. They had white uniforms, and we didn't. We stood out like stumps out there in the field, in a white field. So we were good targets.
And this is what would become known as the Battle of the Bulge. This is about a week into that, and the 75th was called in as part of that. So you mentioned that incident, and you know, not to get gory or harp on it, but just so people understand what you went through. So this is at nighttime and pretty close to you. A mine goes off. It kills 8 guys.
I was blown up in the same thing, and I suffered a broken pelvis bone at the time, and that was about the extent of my injury on that one right there.
So you must have been pretty close to this mine that went off.
We were. I don't know just how close it was, but I remember the guys laying around, and one of the lieutenants right there, he crawled over and he says, "Are you hurt, soldier?" I said, "No." He says, "I don't think I am, you know, because I was deaf, but I could make him out." And I said, "No, I'm not, because I could move." And he says, "Okay, help me." So we dragged a few carcasses out of the way and took some over to by that time the medics had set up a temporary aid station, and we took some boys over there. So anyway, that was my first taste of real getting into the action.
Well, you say that's your first taste. I mean, that's a smack in the face. And you're describing it. I just want to be clear. So this mine explosion, it knocked you from your feet into the snow?
Yes. It knocked me up against a wall, and I don't know just how I hit the wall, but with my back, and I think it was a sharp box or something, because there was a lot of crates laying around between the wall and the crates. I hit something, and it hit my back end. Anyway, that was my first taste of it, the real action. Before that, it was just running lines. We thought of, you know, we kept looking for relief. They told us we'd be relieved in 3 days. We kept looking for that third day. Well, the third day came, and there was no relief. And then the fourth day, and the fifth day, and the sixth day. And it went on like that. Pretty soon, we just gave up, you know.
Again, I'm just, you know, imagining what this must have been like for you. And this is Christmas time, 1944. So you're only 20 years old. You're out here half a world away from all your family. It's freezing cold. You get blown off your feet into a wall. You can't hear because of the concussion of this mine. And then you just said something that you guys, in trying to help with the situation, you were dragging carcasses through the snow. Now, those carcasses a minute before were your buddies, guys that you'd been serving with out there. How did you handle the emotions in that moment, or were you just completely numb to it?
They were engineers, and I knew some of them, but you never get real close to another unit. You know, you see them and work with them and like that, but you don't know them very well. And while we were there anyway, after that little deal was over, we were still in the area. It was New Year's Eve, and we opened up with everything that artillery had in the background, and the army had in the background. They threw everything they could for a New Year's present to the Germans, and they did. They pounded the heck out of them for a long time, but then the Germans threw some of it back at us, you know, but not as much. Afterwards, back at the CP, somebody had a radio, and they were Bing Crosby was singing White Christmas, and that always got to me, you know, that funny how some things will remind you.
That's not the kind of White Christmas you had in mind. You're out there in the snow in the coldest winter Europe had ever seen, but he says, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. You were probably dreaming of coming back home, huh?
Well, I wasn't dreaming of a white Christmas, that's for sure. I knew it wasn't. I was wishing I was home, yes.
And every year, I'm sure you hear that song once or twice during the holiday season. What comes to mind for you when you hear that come on the radio?
I turn it off or I walk away.
It's just too painful for you to remember what you saw?
Well, it brings back a lot of memories, and sometimes, you know, something will... It's just like when I went by the Vietnam Wall, this honor flight. It just does something to you. It just brings... When you see a lot of dead people and you picture them in your mind, you know, you see them, and then to know there's 400,000 guys... I didn't see that many, but I can see people laying all over the snow and like that. I see them get loaded up in trucks after it's all over with, and they're just like cordwood. They throw them in the back end of the trucks and frozen bodies. So it never leaves you. You think back. Some things remind you of it.
And what a powerful reminder to us in two very real ways. One, the scars our veterans return from war with are not always visible, so let's exercise patience and compassion. And two, whatever challenges we're going through this holiday season at home, so many have been through so much worse on our behalf. Believe it or not, Sarge Sargentini is not the only veteran to have told me on this program that Bing Crosby's White Christmas triggered a negative response for him. On the other side of the world from all those soldiers trying to stay warm during the Battle of the Bulge, Mike Wanty was a sailor trying to keep his composure on the destroyer USS Lardner, a ship that earned the nickname the Lucky Lardner for all the close calls it had made it through in the Pacific. Are there some times that you look back on when you were on the Lardner and you remember what happened and you can picture it in your mind and you ask yourself, how did I survive that? Or maybe say, well, hey, I was pretty fortunate to survive that.
There is one, and I don't like to talk about it, and if I do tell you, I may crack in talking about it, but I'll tell you, it happened at Christmas time. This is why I hate Christmas.
Still today, 70 years later, you hate Christmas.
In a way, I don't know if I can tell you or not. It happened at Bougainville. We helped the Marines go ashore, and then the bodies started coming back, and they would come back in baskets. And one of you shouldn't have done this. This boy, they put on the wardroom table. He had no arms, no legs, and he was burned over most of his body. And all we could do was give him morphine, and he wanted to hear White Christmas. All the time, it was a record. You play over and over and over and over. And it took us about 10 hours, I guess, to get to a forward hospital on Vela La Vela. And the doctor said to me, he says, I won't let him die, Mike. I'll get him ashore. And he did, but he died once he got there. But he didn't die on the ship. I've always felt bad. I never got his name. Or his father and mother. I've always wanted to write to her. He was about 17, Marine, nice young guy.
It's okay. I'm sorry, Mike.
You don't realize. I happens if I ever think about it, and at Christmas time, it's double. They keep playing White Christmas. I've gotten used to it. But to talk about it's different.
But over the years, if you're somewhere and White Christmas comes
you
on...
You never can forget it.
You said your whole life you've wished you had gotten his name so you could have written his mother. What do you think you would have written to his mother? What would you have told her?
That he was brave and he thought of his family. He was a farm boy. I think from Ohio, I don't know. But I've always regretted that I didn't get his name and address.
Mike Wanty passed away in 2018. Perhaps that connection with that brave young Marine that never occurred in this life has taken place in the next. It's break time again, but still to come, three men who all experienced Christmas in captivity. And unlike White Christmas for Sarge Sargentini and Mike Wanty, we'll hear about one Christmas carol that evokes a very special memory for an ex-prisoner of war. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.